podium, but in the middle of the wretched, he's quoting the second movement. He's quoting the third movement just for two bars. You know, it's just, it shows his turmoil. You know, and you know, shall I go on? Shall I not go on? Shall I stop? And then so it's quite he's stupefaction non-stop. You know, it's always for a classical symphony. If you see the changes of rhythm, the change of metronome marking, the changes of structure, it's absolutely, it's still today, it has sense because it's so creative. But to come back to your question, why is it so famous? I think it's a combination of the phenomenal journey that somebody is able to write this at this time and constantly opening new doors, as I said at the beginning, and introducing radically new elements in every symphony. If we go through, maybe we can go through very rapidly and to see what's new in every symphony. Mm-hmm. And the Ninth Symphony is just the apotheosis of all this, and the strength of the new elements are probably universal. Mm-hmm. Because it still has full sense today to perform this. I'm not a fan of performing, you know, all romantic or classical music because it's there, and I like to say, maybe I said it to you already, like a symphony should not be only a museum performing things that, you know, it's a state of, you know, they are here, so we should perform. No, not at all. It has to be creative, full of imagination, promoting unknown and living composers, but also learning today from these masterpieces which are having the power to influence our way of looking at beauty today.
Yeah. And then for the concert, you're going to be pairing the Ninth Symphony with John Adams on the Transmigration of Souls. What's your thoughts on that piece?
I'm a kind of person who sees hope everywhere, because it's a strong way of looking at life for me. But I wouldn't say that it's not a dark piece. I think it is a dark piece, honestly, very honestly. It's not the John Adams we know, like, for example, the Harmonie Lyrae we did last January, or, you know, the famous big John Adams extravert way of writing and taking the people, you know, by the strength of the repetitions, and it's much more intimate. I think he wrote a very emotional piece, because he doesn't crack under his own style. And you can know, if you know John Adams and you listen to this piece, you say, my God, he's as shocked as the whole country and the whole world has been for this event. And you always wait that, you know, it's going to explode somehow, but no, it's really, if you have some hope, it's dramatic hope. At one point he's calling for light, and he makes the chorus repeating this word very loud. The huge chorus is singing light, and the children chorus on top of the light is singing very quietly, love, love, love. So he's putting light and love together. I think that's one of the strongest moments of the piece. He's using electronic as well, and you will have voices with some names of the people who tragically disappeared, and some noises of the street in New York. But all this is very naturally, you know, you just, once you listen the first minute of the tape, you say, yeah, of course, how could we write a piece about this without being there with the real noises of what was happening. Now, it is a dark piece. It is a piece which pushes us to reflection, rethinking, but with humility, without, you know, oh, we've gone through this, you know, all these bad people, you know, it was there. Just, it pushed us to rethink of this event in terms of, despite what can happen on the planet today, we always have a way or another to make to take the good of it. I mean, the good of it is not, you know, all the debts and but what it makes in us, gives us inner strength to go forward, because tragedies are inevitable, but our way to react to tragedies is not inevitable, is to be created by ourselves. And that's the message I get when I study this piece and when we did the first rehearsals this week, is that it's all up to us. It's like you can say, I hope there will never be any earthquake on the planet or any terrorist attack. No, it's not. There will be other terrorist attacks. There will be other climatic disasters. But the way we react on this, the way we can prevent or prepare us mentally to go on, that's all up to us to create. And I think that's what John Adams wants to say with this piece.
So are you looking forward to introducing the Adams piece to the Utah Symphony audiences this weekend?
Very, very much, yeah. I think it's going to be a very, very strong program. We decided to start in silence, so no applause. And we start really in silence and finish in silence. I thought it was the best homage we could give to this, even to all the people affected directly and to the whole country as well, is to start in silence, finish in silence. There will be no national anthem to start with, as it is the tradition in any American orchestra. There will be silence before and after. And we'll do the national anthem in the end with the soloists after Beethoven 9. But as for me, I'm starting a sort of new life in America. I mean, still staying busy in Europe, but I mean, I knew that the tradition is to, I've been told, is to start with the national anthem. But I thought it's even stronger not to do it, to keep silence, and to start this John Adam transmigration of sound.
It would make a bigger impact, a stronger impact.
I think, you know, everything comes from the silence, and everything goes to the silence. So we are just, you know, a little moment between silences. Yes. And that's why I had this little vision about silence before and after. And I think, without, you know, wanting to be ridiculously too emotional, just to give the right dimension of a real tragic event which shocked us all.